Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 14th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on, well, I was going to say Sunday night, but it's more like Monday morning in between, but it was Brave Blossom night in Japan. And with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I have survived rugby mania and long hours at the office in order to do the podcast, and before John's sleep deprivation gets to him.
Well, yeah. Well, sleep is overrated or underrated, or
I think unknown is something. Is another one for you.
I tell you,
what was that?
I can tell you. Yeah, the past 2 to 3 years, I've lost more sleep because of the podcast than the Twins. So yeah, sleep overrated. It was a great night. We've got Rick Vandenhurk on the show of SoftBank. He's going to talk to us in a quick chat, and then we've got the Japan Series matchup, which was all settled tonight on Sunday. That was great. So we've got that, and then we've got a little bit of news, and we're going to handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I traveled to, I think I'm going to be calling this place Seimet Dome. How's that? Part Seibu Dome.
You're going to call it anything you like.
I have been.
And I know. I'm sorry. I didn't need to introduce that little encouragement there. John just calls everything what he likes.
Well, not everything, but yeah, okay. So yeah, I went out there on Wednesday, and I caught up with Rick Vandenhurk of SoftBank, and the right-handers in came here in 2015 to Japan, and really started, I mean, he was started fairly quietly. He won his first 9 decisions that year, but he came back in 2016 and he continued winning. He won 4 more games or decisions, and that gave him 14 straight winning decisions to start his from his debut as a, mm-hmm. as a pitcher in Japan. So that was a record. So that was cool. And he's 34 now, and he had back issues. He told me before we started this particular interview, he said he had some back issues early on this season, had an elbow issue with some inflammation. And so he didn't really pitch that much in the regular season this year, but he did start the clincher tonight. Although he didn't get through 5 innings, it was a close game, and he gave up a home run, making it a one-run game, and then put another runner on. And so they had a quick hook for him today. But he did start the clincher, and he would have been the winning pitcher had he gotten the outs in the 5th inning. But he didn't. But anyway, he's battle-tested. He has been on the show a few times, and you're the one who has done the interviews in the past. So this was a time to go out and chat with him. Although I had met him before. He didn't remember me. But I had met him before. It was out there at the Seibu Dome. So I said, you know, it was a couple years ago, I think, that we chatted here. So I kind of jogged his memory, I think. But anyway, here's Rick Vandenhurk. We're here with Rick Vandenhurk of the SoftBank Hawks. Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
How are you feeling physically, like all over? You've had some problems this year.
Yes, I had, but I feel good. Physically, I'm completely healthy. Back pitching, you know, it's great to be back on the mound. So,
all right, so we're in the Climax Series. You guys are here at Seibu, MetLife, whatever you want to call it, the name
final
of the dome.
Stage.
The Lions, what is the key to getting through that lineup?
Yeah, it's a stacked lineup, you know. But I feel like I've been here now since 2015, and it's been stacked since that time. So I think you just have to execute all the little things correctly. There's no room for any mistakes, you know, against these guys. So we know that. So that's the extra focus is on just executing the little things.
Now, obviously, you have to throw good pitches and execute, but they steal bases, they hit home runs, they string together hits, they score with 2 outs.
Yeah.
How do you control all that stuff when you're out there on the mound?
Yeah, that's part of being a pitcher. That's part of the game, and it's important, you know, like I said, against these guys to execute that to the finest. And I think it's been done before, so you know, let's do it again, you know.
Right. Now, how comfortable are you pitching here at this dome?
I like it. You know, the atmosphere is great. I think the mound is good. You know, it's a interesting dome because it's an open, how you call that, open dome or
open air, yeah.
Open air dome. So yeah, it's good to be here.
Now, you guys as a team, you have a lot of playoff experience. So.
Yeah.
how do you approach when you could fall behind by a lot of runs or you right. could take a lead? What's your approach during the game?
I think it's just, you know, focusing on one game at a time, one inning at a time, and build from there. And I think that's what we really done well last year. I think that's what we really done well in the first stage of the climax this year. We fell behind, and then, you know, we just kept fighting, and we came out on top in the end. And I think this series is going to be, you know, the same thing. Very important that we do that and just keep focusing on executing just day by day, game by game, pitch by pitch.
Now, we talked about before we actually started this, but you had so many players this year get some experience. Yeah. Now they might have to play in a playoff situation. So
right.
actually it works out to benefit you guys. Have you been talking about that as a team?
Yes, of course. But most guys that, you know, they have been here before, either in a platoon role or in the bullpen, or, you know, we do have some young guys in the rotation and also in the bullpen. That's going to be, you know, first time, you know, for them. But I think there's a lot of leadership guys here on the team that can help them with that. And you know, and facilitate and the best two that we can, you know.
Now, you guys play them so many times yeah. during the year, and you know them, and they know you. So, oh, yeah. when it comes to this kind of series, how does that go?
You just go, you know. I feel like you adjust, you know, you adjust from pitch to pitch, and you know, get a feel for what they're doing, and then make the adjustment. And that, you know, they're doing the same thing. So you just gotta, you know, you gotta continue to be on top of your game, you know, and be focused, you know, throughout.
Does that regular season data that stacked up, do you guys use that or implement that?
You know, you do, but at the same time, you know, it's a totally different ball game. So playoffs is just different, you know. So we do use that a little bit, but like I said, you have to make adjustments in game as well.
Now, I've always said it doesn't matter what order you win. If you win, you know, four games, right. It doesn't matter what order.
Gotta win them. Gotta win four. That's basically it, you know.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I know that's the focus, but you guys have to, do you, like, feel pressure to win any particular game?
This, you know, started already in the first climax, you know, when you're in the playoffs. You got to win every single game, and that's the mindset. You know, it's not going to be any different this series. Of course, we want to just win right here four in a row, and then, you know, take it back to Fukuoka. If that's the case, that's great. You know, if not, then we got to figure out how to get four wins in six games. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck, man. Yeah, appreciate the time. Take care of yourself. All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick. Very, very nice to chat with you again. Appreciate the time. Jim, what did you think about that short?
Well, it's good to hear him because, you know, he has been so infrequently been with the Hawks this year, and we haven't. And it's when I heard his voice, it's actually just 1 year since I last spoke to him, which was also up at Cebu MetLife Dome. And so that was really cool. All pretty simple stuff. I mean, it's, you know, been there, done that. And I think the interesting thing, when you asked about the young guys, he's like, yes, but we've been here before too. Us other guys who aren't the newbies have been there before. And there aren't really a lot at this stage of the year. There aren't a lot of young guys on the team, except for, I guess, a couple of rookies.
Uh-huh.
The rookie pitchers who are noticeable. But I think, yeah, having that veteran core that is healthy this year, Kenta Imamiya and Seiji Ichikawa and Nobuhiro Matsuda and Yuki Inagita is back, even if I think he's a little slowed, you know, is not running as well as he usually does. He's not running quite as well as he usually does.
No, he's not.
With leg injury. It's an advantage, and I think the advantage is something we've talked about a little bit, and it's that, you know, focus on one thing at a time. Don't try to do too much.
Right.
Just, you know that you can do it, and then go out and do your best to do it, and execute. You know, try your best to execute. There's no secret. Make your best pitches and live with the results.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you know, the team, I mean, these teams play so much during the regular season anyway. Mm-hmm. They know each other really well. They know weak spots. So he said, look, it's just about going out and doing the little things. And I kind of like that, you know, if you get a runner on, if there is a runner on, you put a guy on, slide step, do your slide step really well, focus on whatever it is you're trying to focus on, and just take care of the little things, because those are the things that are going to get you through. So, you know, the whole thing for me, it was mostly the tone, because he sounded excited, he sounded relieved to be healthy and be up there and be available for teammates so that he could perform on this particular
the battle for him since his first year staying fit. So it's funny that, you know, we talk about one of the things that we talk about SoftBank is, you know, is how deep they are, but the pitching has been sort of like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but they have all these good pitchers, but many of them are frequently out of action.
Right.
And they, you know, find, okay, it's almost like they say, you know, I hate to be maybe overstating this, but it's almost like when a SoftBank player gets hurt, they go, good, we got somebody else we want to look at.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, not good. Yeah, but
it's like, okay, we got Christmas presents under the tree we haven't opened yet.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, so that I mean, you know, just the fact that he was so full of energy, so raring to go, and like I said, the elbow issues he had, he just said, well, you know, I've just been pitching a long time. He pitched with the Marlins organization, the Orioles and the Pirates way back in the day, and he has pitched with the national team, I remember, and he's just got a lot of mileage.
Years in Korea.
That's right. He spent a year in Korea before coming to Japan. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's got some mileage on that elbow, and, you know, probably just it's good to have him rested and have him available at this time of year. And, you know, the team did look really good. They won four straight out there at Cebu Dome and made it kind of look easy, if you ask me. A lot easier than I thought when I said the Lions will probably get through this year. Oh, well, you know, you can't guess them all right.
I think you just ought to, the next time people ask you for an opinion about the Lions, say, you know, do what I do. What do I know?
Right. Well, you know, when people guess, and that's all we can do as observers, we're guessing, whether it's educated or non-educated, any guess is as good as the other one, as another, I should say. You know, you just really, it depends on a lot of factors that probably we don't even think about. So it is a guess. You know, it really is. And,
yeah.
And this team, if you want to move on and talk about the series, this team, like I said before, during the season, it's the Lions are the hardest team to figure out and try to understand how they have success. I mean, some of the success is very obvious because you see the home runs, but, you know, the stolen bases, the way runners move up, the way they play defense, all those other factors, they're kind of hidden. And it's going to get, you know, production A or production B from any particular player throughout the lineup when you look at them defensively. Yeah, but when you look at them offensively, you see the home runs and the stolen bases, they're right in front of your face.
Sure. They run the bases well. They hit the ball well. But their pitching is, you know, it's inconsistent. And to say it's bad it's bad overall, but it's not always bad. And that's the thing. That's because the Lions are, you know, they're a little bit like a young pitcher with good stuff who has not mastered, you know, his, being able to repeat his arm slot in a variety of different, you know, emotional situations and, you know, being able to discard that stuff, and he loses his command easily.
Yeah,
I mean, Lions are like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, they've got good stuff. Their pitchers throw well, but they don't always throw well. You know, they pitch well enough, you know, at the end of the season when they had a string of outstanding, well, I'll go out and say outstanding pitching performances. This was not a huge, surprise, because we've seen them pitch. We've seen them make these pitches. and we're, you know, and people were going, well, geez, where were these guys before? But we knew who they, you know, we knew where they were, who they were before, and we had seen flashes of that, but for it to come out, you know, game after game after game was something of a surprise. And in the final stage, the pitching was up and down. I mean, it was very typical Lions stuff. It was predictably inconsistent, I suppose.
Right, right. Well, let's take a look at the games, and then we'll put an epithet on mm-hmm. on their season. But game one,
I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, I can't. 8-4, the Hawks win.
Zach Neal
went to the mound, pitched a really strong game, and a home run in the seventh inning, and they took him out, and he was leading, and that was basically that. The Hawks rallied off the bullpen and came back to win, and, you know, it was too bad because Zach was in line to keep that streak going, and I think he really wanted to keep pitching in that game, but I don't know if I've been seeing him enough this season that I could say he looked a little fatigued, but he gave the impression that he wanted to stay in, but that he knew he was tired. I mean, I'm not sure if you saw that as well, if you got to see that game at all.
I did see the game, and I did not necessarily see that.
Okay. So
of course, I was watching two games at once and doing other stories. So
right, yeah.
How much I saw was a good question. So yes,
exactly. Okay. So, but there was nothing, you know, particular that stood out about this game that was a surprise. You know, Zach did leave the mound with a chance to win and ended up with no decision. And I think the one thing that might have stood out in this game was the fact that Katsunori Hirai, the guy whose arm I said might practically fall off, came in to get some outs and really couldn't get any outs, and they took him out very quickly. He hardly pitched in this series at all, and he was very ineffective when he did pitch. So that was the first game of his short PLCS existence.
What I saw from the series as a whole was that the Hawks bullpen was just basically, except for the one game when they got a day off.
Right. Typhoon day.
Well, I should say they got 2 days off. They had to pitch one inning in 2 days. Except for that stretch, they were just really good. Yeah. And the Lions' bullpen was really bad.
Well, it was really typical. I mean, it was typical of what we saw from that bullpen all season.
Well, it wasn't typical that Hirai had, you know, blew the game up. But yeah, and then of course the 8-4, the final score in game one is 8-4, but in fact it was 5-4, and then they, you know, they put Daiki and Okide in, and you know, that we were talking about him last week, who really never pitches anybody except Rockten, Lotte, and Oryx.
Yeah, the guy I said should never go near the mound in the playoffs. They put him out there and started a fire.
They went from being in the game to being out of the game in light speed. So that was the bullpen which let that game get away. So the Hawks pitching was the Hawks bullpen, on the other hand, was quite good. So that was that game.
Okay, and then on Thursday, game two, the final 8-6 that went, and this one wasn't much of a story other than Akira Nakamura, who's battling a condition called, I can't pronounce this. I listened to it on web.com or whatever, the Webster's.com. Dystonomia? Dystonomia. Anyway.
It's an autonomic nervous disorder.
Right. It's characterized by lack of reflexes, defective sense perception, and motor incoordination. And so he comes up and has... it's amazing he can even play baseball, but you know, for him to have a double and a home run and just an outstanding game carrying kind of performance. And I, you know, when I was out there on Wednesday and I saw you guys like Yuya Hasegawa, who got a hit I think in the opener, and I saw Nakamura running around, I thought, you know, these guys are proven veterans. They have strolling around out here. doing not much of anything, just waiting to wreck a game, you know, which is what they did, you know. Nakamura, a guy you don't expect to actually see. I mean, he was batting fifth this game, and I'm like, this guy has played all this year, and he's batting fifth, and, you know, I mean, he had 159 plate appearances. That's
right. He basically,
I don't remember hardly any of them.
Yeah, he came in, and his season started in June or something. I think he played a few weeks, and then he was hurt. And then he came back, and he's been really good, actually, since he came back the second time. He wasn't up for long. But, yeah, that was his day. It's like they had the hitter of the day at the first game, which was sort of a group effort. And game two was again, the bullpen, which, again, basically shut the line. Well, I don't know if they shut them down, but they...
They did not, but they... They
did not, but they did well enough. You know, they did well enough. I think they allowed two runs over the last 4 2/3 innings or something. But they did well enough when they started with an 8-run lead, when they had 8 runs in the bank already. So
yeah, had a 2-run single I think early on in the game, and then he had a home run. So he had an RBI single and a two-run homer. So he knocks in 3 runs. So at that rating, then the Lions, like I said, there's this team that you just can't count them out of games, and they were down big early, and they start battling back, and Hotaka Yamakawa comes up with a tying run on base, and he's up against Yui Tomori of the Hawks, and the closer for the Hawks, and they had a chance to, you know, tie the score, and they just couldn't do it, but they were there, you know. Early on, I think 7-0 early on, and then they got a run in the fourth, they got 3 in the fifth, and like I said, they came up in the ninth inning with a chance to do it. And I really thought they would. I thought, you know,
they had tons of guys on base. So that really wasn't a problem, but the bullpen, you know, the Hawks bullpen just was able to keep the big outs. They got a big performance from Shuta Ishikawa, who's had a really quiet year. I don't know what the story on that, but the other one is, I think I want to mention is Yui Tomori, because he started the season, and he had the beginning of the season. The first 2 months were very much like Shota Nakazaki of the Hiroshima Carp, it was sort of like every save involved leaving 2 or 3 runners on base. You know, if he had a 3-run lead, he'd give up 2 and leave the bases loaded. Everyone was like a time bomb waiting to go off. And who's your guy, Masui? Hiroshi Masui. Hiroshi Masui was also, those three, they looked like, I don't know what. I was waiting to see which of them would actually burst in. Because they all basically got sent down to the farm because they just were not, you know, they were just too flammable. And they came back, and Shitagaki and Masui went into a middle relief role. And so in the back of my mind, I've got Yui Tomori linked with those guys. But when he came back, it was like that whole first part of those first 2 months of these didn't really happen.
Right.
He's been really good. You know, those other two guys kind of like came back and they said, oh, geez, here they go again. But Mori came back and he's like going, you know, it's like maybe it wasn't a rehabilitation as much as it was an exorcism.
Get rid of the bad spirit. Right?
Like he came back and it was like he's a different person. You know, his head wasn't spinning anymore.
Thank you for that image. I agree. He has looked really good. He's been the kind of closer I think that Dennis Sarfati would be proud of. Let's put it that way. And so he shut down that game. And here's the thing I always think about this advantage that the pennant-winning team has. If, by chance, you happen to slip up in the first two games, as the Lions did,
you end up facing
the top end of your opponent's rotation, whereas you're sending out your numbers 3 and 4 guys to try to stay in the series. And that's exactly what happened. So we had game 3, and it ends up being a 7-0 decision for the Hawks, and they go up 3-run in the series. And that was because their ace, Kodai Senga, just went out there and shut the whole place down.
He was coming off kind of a mediocre. He was coming off a mediocre start in the first stage. And I was interesting. The other thing I liked about that game was in the first inning, in the 8-6 game 2 win, they started the Hawks offense started with a fluke hit.
Mm.
And it was the same guy. It was Taisei Makihara hit a chopper. It was like it had glue on it. Because he hit it, uh-huh. It bounced once, stopped on the foul line.
Yep.
And Tomi Omori was looking at this ball like, are you going to just stop there and stop moving? Give me a break. So anyway, so he's on first base, and he came around to score on a Akira Nakamura single. And then in the second, in 3, Makihara leads off, and he just gets the end of the bat on the ball and just loops it over the infield. It's like he couldn't have put less energy on it. If he had tried, you know, he would have had to bunt it to have a less lively ball come up.
Right.
And so you got these two fluke hits, and then Nakamura comes up and he hits a fat pitch, and he just looks like, oh man, this is going to be his game again, because it's like you just couldn't throw any strikes past him. So it's a 1-0 Hawks lead. But then two things happened. One is Kodai Senga took off. And he didn't need any more run support. And then it's like Makihara's going, you're not getting away that easy. I'm not going to make this game about you.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Again, Nakamura had two more hits in this game, including a double. So he was really strong.
And then Makihara, and he also drove in the second run in the 8-6 game as well. With a sac fly, and he had a double in this game to make it 3-0 Hawks. And then in the fourth inning, he hit a 2-run homer to make it 5-0 Hawks. And that was pretty much the end of the story. So it's like weird. It's one day it's Nakamura, and the next day it's Taisei Makihara, he's like a left-handed. I mean, I loved his numbers in the minor leagues, but because he looked like a real good hitter in the minors. And the Hawks, and I mentioned this abstractly last week, is that the Hawks have this thing where they almost like don't want their minor leaguers to try to do too much.
What do you mean by
because
too
they
much?
Come up and Produce well they all the, come up but no they come up and they're all slap hitters. It's almost like they're handed a little, you know, the veterans tell them, you're a rookie, you're a nobody. Don't try to pull the ball. Don't try to drive the ball. That's not your job. Because and even though they hit for power in the minors, they come up and it's like all they're trying to do is go the opposite way, deaden the ball, try not to hit the ball in the air, use their speed, you know, just be, you know, slap hitters A to Z. And Makihara had some pop in the minors, but we haven't seen it to date. He's a smaller guy. He's a small, skinny guy, but he had some power in the minors, and we haven't seen it on the first team. And but he does have it. I mean, the reference was to Shuhei Fukuda, who when he came up didn't hit for power, but has recently shown some pop, and also to Kenta Imamiya, who we'll get to in a moment. And these guys, it's like after they've been around for a while, they said, oh, can we stop being those stick insect slap hitters now? Can we go back to being the hitters we want to be? You know, it's funny because, well, you know, as I said, the last week he came up and they told him, don't try to do it. His focus was on being a defensive type player.
Defensive type.
And once you got a job, yeah, to fit the bill, you know, not, you know, to be a good bunter and to be a good base runner and to hit the ball to the opposite field and do all the things that they teach little leaguers to do in Japan. Not try to hit home runs. And then after he had a job, he said, well, you know, forget that. right, the way I was in high school, which was really smacking the ball.
Right. Yeah, doing some work out there. So, they grabbed this typhoon that we had coming in, and everyone was talking about it, and they canceled the games for Saturday before the games were over on Thursday. And I thought that the fact that they knew that there was going to be a day off on Saturday would be an advantage for at least the Lions, maybe to get back on track, or juggle the bullpen, maybe think about bringing Neil back or something like that. But we go to game four. It seemed like they had scored in the first two or three innings of three runs in every game, and they didn't on this day. It took them to the third inning, and then Kenta Imamie hits the first of his three home runs, and that's a record for Climax Series, I think, in either round, obviously, but for one game to hit three home runs. And he finishes with five hits and six runs batted in, and he was 10 for 19 in the series. And they could hit today, and he hit a bunch of pitches that looked very similar. And even the second home run that he hit, it was a nice smooth swing. It looked like he wasn't even trying to do anything but make contact, and that one went out. And, he just manhandled him from the shortstop position in terms of with the bat. And, today was the first time I thought about it, because I think both these guys played on the same day in similar stages here in the States in the American League. You got Jose Altuve of the Houston Astros. And he's a really slight guy, very short in stature, but he hits for power. And I think I saw some glimpses of similar kind of,
Because he's on the skinny side compared to Altuve. He's not correct. As stocky.
Correct.
Yeah. So it is a surprise.
No upper body compared to Altuve.
Yeah, it is a surprise. But, something that... Tom House, former pitching coach and pitching consultant and fitness consultant, told me, 25 years ago. It's not like, okay, I actually haven't been in Japan that long. It's just kind of a flashback for movie purposes.
Right.
So 25 years ago, Tom House and I were chatting about Japanese players and fitness, and he said he had worked with the Chinichi Dragons and the Lotte Marines. And he said they have a lot of core strength, a lot more, and they have a lot more muscle balance than major leaguers and minor leaguers in America did 25 years ago. So while they may not be as heavily muscled, they can generate a lot of energy because of the balance.
Right, right. Because, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
The core strength. Yeah.
Okay. So as soon as when you see somebody like Imamiya, or I'll even say Tetsuto Yamada, I think, these guys don't look like they should be able to hit the ball really, but they do.
Yep, they do. And, tweeting while watching the game, one of the Lions, I think Coaster Freak is a Lions fan, and he said, it's over, early on. And I said, well, it's kind of only three runs. It's not so bad. But it was pretty much over because they couldn't get Imamiya out today, and he was the series MVP. And so the Lions, for the second consecutive year, win the Pacific League pennant, but can't get to the Japan Series because they can not pitch and hit in the same games in the playoffs, and they're done.
Okay, I got a trivia question for you, but it's a quick one. Do you know the last team that won the most games in the regular season but failed to win in the final stage of the postseason and advanced to Jim?
It would have been the Hawks, Bankudaiye, at the time.
It would die. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. The 2004 and 2005 Daiye Hawks. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that was... test me, Jim Allen. Come on. So anyway, I did see an article that said that...
I apologize for such a lame question.
It wasn't lame. It was good for some people, but, not for me.
not for John the Wizard. Okay, you go, man.
I was going to say 2005, but I wasn't sure if it was 2004 was the first year.
But anyway, it was 2004 and 2005. Yeah, I hope I didn't say two.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah, you're good. So SoftBank, since the team became SoftBank Hawks, it has not played against the Giants in the Japan series. So this will be the first time. And the last time was in 2000 when Sadaharu Oh was manager and together with the Giants that these teams met in the Japan series. So that should be fun. So
I'll say something else, that this, regardless of how the Pacific League Climax series final stage was going to go, that whichever team won to play the Giants, now that we know the Giants, for a record time in the Japan series, because the Giants had played the Lions 10 times, and the Giants had played the Hawks 10 times.
Wow.
So this is the Hawks. Of course, of those 10 times, the first time for the SoftBank Hawks, and Daiei was once, and the other 9 were the Nankai Hawks. So, okay.
Let's go to the CLCS.
Yes.
Yes. CLCS and the Giants and Tiger Suit. We didn't even talk about the fact that the Hawks beat the Eagles in the third game of the first stage to get through, or first round to get through. But obviously they did, and that was a pretty good game. And they saw the Tigers eliminate the Bay Stars to get through to play in this, in second of the CLCS.
Yeah, weird thing that the in the first stage, both of the game twos were 6-4, and then both of the game threes were 2-1.
Yeah, and that the Bay Stars essentially wild pitched a run home, and another wild pitch set up the run that they lost by. So two wild pitches, that's basically how they ended their season. But anyway, so the Tigers get through, and they managed to win a game in this series, but I thought they were outclassed, sort of. I mean, not necessarily on the scoreboard. The first game on Wednesday, 5-2, the Giants win, and they got early home runs from Yoshihiro Maru and Kazuma Okamoto. And the only real doubt about this game came in the ninth inning when Tatsunori Hara gave the ball to closer Ruby De La Rosa, and he ends up loading the bases and bringing the tying run, putting the tying run on, bringing the go-ahead run to the plate. So they opted to go to the bullpen for Kazuto Taguchi, who got the final out for the save. He was pretty tough. I didn't really think that the Tigers were really threatening. It was just, they had some runners on, but you still have to drive them in. And I wasn't sure that De La Rosa was going to give up a lot of hits to.
Yeah, game was really Shun Yamaguchi's, his win, and then they go to game two, and it's Christopher Mercedes' game.
Yeah, that ends up being a 6-0 win for the Giants, and Mercedes was masterful. It reminded me when he started his career at MPB by winning. I'm sorry, he tossed 25 consecutive scoreless innings. That kind of reminded me of that. What's that?
I said yes. Now I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. So and then it just seemed like Han Chi had no chance, and of course the no runs were an indication of that. But Alex Guerrero homers off Onelki Garcia, 2-run shot in the fourth, and that made it 3-0. It just seemed like the game was over in the fourth inning for me. And then Okamoto has an RBI hit later on. Yoshiyuki Kame, the guy I call Kamazing, he had 3 hits, 2 of them doubles.
Yeah.
And it just,
he was amazing. He was incredible. He was just so much, it was so much fun watching him in that game. And I don't mean just the hitting, but, he made a good, it's almost like every game that he has Yoshiyuki Kame. And it's like every game where he shines, it's like, he makes a good play in the field. He scored a big run because he legged out a double that didn't look like a double.
Mm.
And then he stole third base. And, Jason and I had a kind of a slight disagreement about this. Basically, he took off for third and then Sakamoto followed him. Because if you look at the video, Kame is like halfway to second when you can just see Sakamoto jumping. Unless it's the case of Sakamoto missed the sign. Because it was a late steal. It was like, they're not holding me, I'm going to go. So he was halfway to third when the pitcher was still holding the ball. So stuff like that. And the interesting thing to me about that whole thing is that the next day in the wherever it was on the internet, I was looking at, they were talking about Kame being an atypical leadoff hitter. Basically, he's not a, you know, he's like 75 years old and he's not a base stealer.
Or 37, was. But yeah, it's true.
Okay, you know.
It's
you
true.
It's, you know, he's 75 years in baseball player years.
True.
And he was never that fast to begin with. But he's a leadoff hitter. And in Japan, they really love their role identities. You know, leadoff hitters should be small guys who are fast and can steal bases. And the number two guy is a small guy who can hit it to the opposite field, but really doesn't do anything well except bunt and usually would have an on-base percentage lower than my IQ. Which I can leave that one up to the listeners to decide how bad that is. But anyway, the point being, they like their, you know, they were all going nuts about Kame being this high on base guy who doesn't run all the, I mean, who doesn't have any speed, and has got a little pop being the leadoff hitter because he's such an atypical leadoff hitter. So they were all saying, of course, if it had been Alex Ramirez managing, they would have said, what's Ramirez doing to cost the DeNA BayStars the pennant? Where if it's Tatsunori Hara doing, and it's, boy, Tatsunori Hara's really original.
Right. Yeah, it's all about perspective, right? So,
yep.
I thought the Giants treated the game like a spring training game, so to speak, because they started a guy, somebody called right. Shohei Togo, yeah. And a rookie, he was a sixth pick in 2018, and he made his first pro start on September 21st against DeNA, and this was his third start at this level, and,
right.
You know, and I suppose it was going to be a bullpen game, because we know that Tomoyuki Sugano is not going to pitch. We knew he wasn't going to pitch, so, okay, whatever, they were up 3-0. They had some play room. So there wasn't a lot of intensity to me, but it just seemed like they figured they were going to win the game anyway. And the Tigers said, no, we're not going to get punked by a bunch of backups and a no-name pitcher. And
Koji Chikamoto,
probably the guy who's going to get the Rookie of the Year nod. I mean, he's going to get mine probably. He gave them a 3-run triple in a 5-run fifth, and Oyama hit a solo home run in a 9th, and that was a difference. And they came back and they won 7-6. And I need to find or make a GIF. Somebody's got to teach me how to make GIFs, because they did rally and they looked good, because they had really outclassed at this point, like they really shouldn't have been here. And it wasn't that, you know, they were outclassed on the scoreboard so much. It's just like they just were not scoring and they just didn't look good.
Left a lot of runners, more runners than they would have liked to see leave on base. I mean, this even the 6-0 win, they had a lot of, at the end of the game, they had some runners on base and a lot of wasted opportunities. In this game, it was like, in fact, even in the their 7-6 win that, you know, had five inning, it was the third straight inning where they loaded the bases. I'm going like, okay, you know, and it kind of eventually backfired on the Giants and they couldn't get them out. But it was a fun game nonetheless. I mean, Okamoto had another big game to tie the game with a two-run. He had a two-run double that was about, I don't know, about 3 inches from being a grand slam because right. It hit off the top of the wall. Then he had a two-run homer. And it was a really fun game. And then in the 8th inning, with holding with a 6-6 tie, they brought in another 75-year-old Kyuji Fujikawa to pitch 2 innings.
Yeah.
And Fujikawa, a 2-inning save in the last game of the Climax series.
Yeah, this is right? The guy who when he came back to Japan in that first year, played with an independent team, and then when he came back to MPB, I talked to a foreign player whose name will not be revealed, who said, his pitches are not that good. And here he is still pitching and playing and looking good. So, yeah, but we got to move on. We can't dwell on this game.
Sorry. Okay.
So in game 4, that was Sunday night. The Giants basically ended the series with a very rare play that we were discussing on Twitter, and 1-1 tie.
Rare. I never seen it before.
Rare, yeah. Well, I mean, I joke that Otis Nixon used to do this. Otis Nixon in the major leagues, I think a lot of times when he was with Atlanta, I saw him bunt with two outs and at sometimes with a runner on third because he was trying to just beat it out and get that run home. But, yeah, okay, never seen it before. All right, but two outs and a runner on third, and she throws a bunt down, and Yuki Nishi of the Tigers grabs it and throws it away. He just threw it a little bit wide, and the run scores, and that was the tie-breaking run. And then Alex Guerrero hits a two-run homer in the seventh inning, and the Giants win behind a really strong, another strong pitching performance. But this one...
from the bullpen.
Yeah,
the
involving the bullpen, exactly.
Right, because it's a 1-1 game in the sixth inning, and the starter just walked two guys, and they've got the go-ahead run and an insurance run on base with nobody out, and the bullpen, four relievers come in and retire 12 batters in a row.
Right.
And then, of course, Maru gets down that bunt, which I just love. But having watched it on the video, of course, he was bunting for a base hit. Now, we were talking about this, and you said, well, maybe he signaled the runner, which is possible, because that's what they used to do. A hit run used to be that, or would give the runner a signal without, you know, the coach giving it. He might have given it, but my guess is that Yamamoto saw him drop the barrel of the bat to bunt, and since the Yusuke Oyama was so far playing so far back, he could take a 15-foot lead off of third base, and you know, it was really good base running by him to be able to score when they weren't able to get the out at first base.
Right, and they ruled it a hit. I first looked at it and thought it was an error because of the throw, but I mean, it would have been close, so
I thought it was a good play by Nishi to get to the ball, but somebody had pictures of it on Twitter, you know, took a lot of pictures. Nishi just sort of couldn't get up off his knees.
Over, yeah.
He dropped to his knees.
Well, he was in total shock that dropped the bunt on him, and then that he couldn't complete the play because it wasn't really that. I mean, I've seen tougher plays, to be honest, but
oh, sure, it was not a good bunt. I mean, if you're to because a third baseman is that shallow, you want to get it kind of past the pitcher's mound.
Right, right. So the Giants win the series 4-1 to one, and both series ended up 4-1, but in very different circumstances. One with the home team. Lost a game. The home team did not win a game, but had a victory, one win advantage situation. So we've got our matchup. Let's make a four seam transition and talk about Yoshitomo Tsutsugo of the Bay Stars. Mm-hmm. So after they lost their playoff game against the Tigers on October 7th, Tsutsugo said he and the team announced that he would try to make the jump to the major leagues, and I think, you know, he has a good bat and decent enough skills, and I don't know that he's going to get a lot of looks from teams, but he's going to be posted, and let's face it, he's a guy of the five tools. I think he has two. he has shown some power, but I think he doesn't have anything but maybe average speed and average to below arm, and he's really not going to get better as a defender when he goes over there, but he might find a niche. He might find a place. If he gets in the right situation and where he can be a contributing left-handed hitter who maybe hits for some power, depending again on the team that he's with, the location he plays. And to me, maybe a fourth outfielder, maybe a fringe elevator guy. I don't know. I hope he's better, has a better career in the States than Kensuke Tanaka, who was with the Nippon Ham Fighters, a big star there, an infielder, but he really couldn't get on the major league roster for a team that probably needed his skills or his kind of skills at the time.
Sure.
So I just don't know. I hope for the best. I like Tsutsugo. I
don't think he's a good comparison to Kensuke Tanaka.
Oh, I'm just thinking, I'm not reason. Comparing. I'm just saying that I hope he has a better career than
Kensuke Tanaka. I think he will.
Because
I think he will, because
I had expectations for Tanaka, and
I did too, but I was also surprised because he fits the bill of the guys who don't do well in MLB.
Okay.
In that he's very quiet and with, I would say, withdrawn. Ultimately, he's taking out a ton.
Yeah, it wasn't a comment on my part. I'm just saying I hope he has a better career than
cause, no, I think he had decent. Yeah, well, I think he had decent skills. But anyway, we'll skip Kensuke Tanaka. I was asked on White Sox. Apparently, some people who blog about the White Sox were curious whether he was a guy who would fill their bill as a left-handed power hitter. And yeah, I
saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, you heard that. Saw that one. Okay. Yeah, it was basically nothing I haven't said before. I see him as a potential, you know, third outfielder, but there are question marks. He could surprise you because he's still only 27. And I don't know about I'm concerned about his adaptability, but I'm very encouraged by his makeup.
Mm.
I think he's a plus. I think he's a plus makeup guy like Munenori Kawasaki is. He probably won't do the dances or do the funny interviews because that's not quite his character.
Right.
And Kawasaki is, I think Kawasaki is just really, really, really smart. I think he's extremely intelligent. I think Tsutsugo is a smart guy about baseball. But I don't think some of the other things are going to translate.
Mm.
He's a guy who I think could have a lot of positives for a major league. I think that any team that actually thinks about it will be able to sign him for a song. I think the posting fee is the amount they're going to have to pay for a posting fee is going to be close to nothing.
Peanuts, if not just chips.
Yep, peanuts, sure. Yeah. Just the shells, and they'll eat the peanuts and give the Bay Stars the shells. And this is a guy who could really surprise people and be his ceiling is maybe not really high, but he could be a serviceable major leaguer. I don't think it's Hideki Matsui high, but I like him.
Yeah,
but I like him. The other little things that he can do. He's a leader. He's a plus clubhouse guy. And he's just willing to do anything to help the team, and he's positive. He's going to make and contribute to a good working environment, and he might adjust and be a fairly good offensive player. I don't think that's the most likely scenario, but I think it's possible.
Okay, I want to see what he does when you have a situation in which you have fastball counts and you get those fastballs, and I think he can hit fastballs. I know he can hit off speed pitches, so I'll be excited to see what he can do. I just don't know that he'll have a great career in the States. But like I said, I'm just hoping he's better than some of the other guys who have gone over there. All right.
I think he will be,
Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so the first one is from Michael via email, and he says, "Hi, John and Jim. Thanks for all that you do."
Yeah, thank you.
"Whatever happened to Carter Stewart of the SoftBank Hawks? I didn't expect to see him on the top team or anything, but I did expect him to get some farm team experiences. Have you heard anything?" And I guess it's the second farm team. "Have you heard anything about his progress? What did the Hawks have him doing all summer?" Jim.
I think writing postcards to home. No, I don't know. I heard he was pitching on the third team, which it plays the college teams and independent minor league teams and club teams, and getting used to the way Japanese baseball is played. I know I was following the first game he pitched in against a corporate league side, got a lot of press, and after that, not much. But I am keen to find out how he's made his adjustments now and what he thinks, because people were asking, "What do you think about Japan?" when you'd been here like 3 days.
Yeah.
It's a silly question. I don't generally introduce, to talk to new professionals about their experience as a professional baseball player, because they tend to lack perspective. But I'm curious to see about that. But as far as pitching, he did not pitch in the Western League the last time I checked, which was in September.
Yeah, and I actually had that on my list of questions to ask Rick Vandenhoek, and he just didn't have time, and he was kind of in a rush, so I just skipped it. So I don't know either. I did see him pitch. There's a video of him on YouTube pitching in a, I think maybe there was that corporate league game. It was in June, his first appearance out there. And then I didn't, but again, we're talking about a really young player or pitcher, and we're talking about a team that's really deep. So I wouldn't have expected him to pitch on the second team. I mean, you remember how Dennis Sarfati told us at one point, I don't know if it was in the interview that we did with him or not, but there's a kid on that third team who could lift the gym. And I think that kid is either a pitcher or an outfielder. So there's some stiff competition. It's not like you're going to walk in off the street from high school and be able to perform and jump onto a team and even get on the second team with the SoftBank Hawks. They're pretty deep. I think had he joined an organization, a different organization, especially one like the Yakult Swallows, he would have made 10 appearances on the top team this year. Maybe more.
Yeah, deep on him, he's a starter.
Yeah, maybe more. So it just depends. So it's a lot about situation. So let's bring him along slowly. He is very young. Especially, you know, for the Japanese kids, I think they understand the transition, and with the tournament that they have, the opportunity to play in that national tournament, I think they mature a little bit faster in that sense of playing big games. But I don't think high school kids, I mean, they might seem like game, but you're not playing for a national tournament, and that's completely different. But you know, I don't know that much about Carter. I don't know if he played on the 15 and under national team or what his experience with that was. So we just have to see. But I would expect him to at least pitch on the second team next year. All right, the next question comes from NPB Card Guy, and he says, not sure this is so much a question but an observation. It looks like it's fairly uncommon for an NPP team to fire a manager after only 1 year. Looking back over the past 25 years or so, it's only happened a handful of times. What seems odd to me is that
the Eagles have done it 3 times in 15 years.
Yusuke Hiraishi lasted longer than 1 season, but only just longer. So I guess my question would be, what makes the Eagles front office so impatient with their managers? It can't be just Kazuhisa Ishii because he hasn't been around that long. Jim?
Well, he hasn't been that long, but yeah, I mean, I was curious about the whole thing about with Ishii. Was almost like he was really defensive about it when it sort of became known that Hiraishi was on the block because nobody wanted to talk to him about a contract extension. I don't know what the relationship with Ishii in the front office is. I thought Ishii's hiring as general manager is, you know, it's like he was having trouble figuring out, you know, he was really good using the mop, but you know, mopping up the spills and stuff. But
really
you,
good.
Yeah. So you just wonder, you know,
kid,
what he's going to bring to the table.
Ever done any engineering?
Yeah,
like the way you handle that mop.
Exactly. You look like you know your way around a garage. So,
well,
they got somebody who knows his way around the garage. But it was a mystery to me. I don't know. But yes, the Eagles front office is a really... is an amalgamation. It's very funny because three teams in NPB that are owned by internet companies, DNA, SoftBank, and Rakuten. And SoftBank and Rakuten are both really weird in the sense that they're both, well, SoftBank, they both have vestiges. They both have these sort of artifacts of being high-tech. Rakuten's got a lot of that from the parent company. SoftBank's got a lot from that from the parent company. But at the same time, the management structure has always been a little, almost like they're embarrassed by being too new.
Mm.
In that they leave it up to the manager to run things, or the front office does things, kind of works in mysterious and unfathomable ways. Some of the people they've hired in the front office, in the Rakuten front office, are kind of questionable. People in the Hawks front office are still populated by people who came over from SoftBank and know more about cell phones than they do about which end of the bat you hold.
Too many nerds in there.
Yeah,
too many geeks.
Or banking or finance. You know, they got finance people running the ball team. And SoftBank, however, of course, has got Sadahara O running it. which is at the very top, which is a huge amount of stability that Rock 10 really has not had.
Well, I'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
Okay. But, so anyway, the point is Rock 10 is completely unpredictable. They don't seem to have any consistent policy. Now, he mentioned Oryx, and I said it was understandable that Oryx changed managers every year because they had a death, and they changed the manager when the team merged, and then he died, and they had to replace him with somebody, and then they had to find a new manager. But Oryx has had probably more short-term managers than anybody. I mean, the last 15 years, I would be surprised. I'm not going to count them, but I would be surprised if Oryx had fewer than 10 managers in the last 15 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with the big typhoon, it afforded me time to check on this off Saturday. Oh, I discovered a sort of a trend.
Look
so,
at you.
It's true. The Rock 10, and Dave listed them in his email. He said Yasushi Tao was the first year manager. Then they had Marty Brown, and they had Dave Hiromoto, Dave Okubo, and those are the three guys the past 15 years who, because the team started in 2005, and those are the guys who have been fired after 1 year. And a lot of guys have only been given 1 year, but what I did find was there are a lot of two-year guys as well, guys who either took over partially through one season and then got the next year and then were fired or let go or there was a change. Or guys who were on the team in a separate role who didn't get that much time. And I saw Norio Tanabe of Seibu didn't stick around.
Sure.
That was 2015. I think he took over. And then he
lasted 2 years before.
Right. Daijiro Oishi only got one real year at Oryx after taking over for Terry Collins when he walked out. So he took over in 2008, only got 2009, and he finished dead last of almost 30 games under 500. Atsuya Furuta of
Yakult,
when he stopped playing and just decided to manage, he was really bad, and he didn't last. That was 2006-07. And then Shige Kazumori at Chunichi 2017-18. And one more guy, Takao Obana, only 2 years at Yokohama. So this was 2010 and 11. So you got the one-year guys, yes, but I don't think 2 years is that much time either. A couple of these guys, like I said, didn't get 2 years. So we have other things. Now, the thing that I did notice was the teams that win a lot have a lot of stability, and you're getting into that with the SoftBank Hawks. You see stability with the front office and then with the managers, and the guys stick around and there's continuity and there's a lot of winning. And so you see that
the Hawks have had three managers since 1995 or I'm gonna say 1996.
Right, so you got the Hawks, the Deer Giants, and I would even put Nippon Ham in there, because while they had a few more managers, they kept them for at least 5 years, it seems like. So stability. Like I said, I saw the comment somewhere and I repeated it on the show, which was players don't win championships, organizations do. And it takes from everyone from, you look at the Hawks, and we've had one of the trainers for the Hawks. We had one of the traders on from the Hawks on the show talking about how they discuss what players are going to play. I mean, it takes everybody. You can have really great players, and I said this before, you can have really great weapons and aim them in the wrong direction or not use them right and not win. So, it takes everything, and as soon as they get some more continuity, I wouldn't blame Ishii in particular for this. For this move, I probably would blame him, but I wouldn't blame him for what happened this season. They had a successful season, so for them to have a successful season and want to throw it away doesn't really make sense to me. I don't know when it's going to be something we'll have to dig into next year, which we will do, right?
I think the thing that got me, the thing that got me was she basically doing a Donald Trump and blaming the reporters for reporting a story that he then said was accurate.
Right, right.
It's like, don't say we haven't talked about a contract extension, because we haven't talked about a contract extension. We haven't even talked about it. So what are you writing that we haven't talked about it yet?
Right, right.
Okay.
About the draft that's coming up this next week, Roki Sasaki is the jewel of the draft. Mm-hmm. He will probably be the first pick chosen by a number of teams, so we'll watch that. That'll be on Thursday the 17th, so we'll be talking about that next week. And then we've got our Japan Series matchup, so we'll have those games to talk about. We will talk to you in a week from now. Anybody else who has a question, thank you to Dave and Michael for the mm-hmm. questions. Anyone else with a question, send it to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the hashtag High Heater. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the Japan Series.